How are you this afternoon?
Fine.
You find me, as usual, completely unprepared to give you a speech. I haven't the least idea what I'm going to talk to you about. Not the least. But there are two or three small items that I might mention in passing, and perhaps as I go along I might think of something to say. Is that all right with you? Well, it seemed to me as I was coming along to the theater this afternoon that man doesn't know one particular thing about man. And this is a great oddity that he would not know this one thing, and that is that there's some hope for him. Now, very few people know that. They think things are just going to go along and unwind on a fate line that may or may not include man on the stage of Earth in a few decades. But things are sort of going to unwind one way or the other, and, of course, inevitably, sooner or later, come a cropper. But as I was thinking it over, I thought perhaps man really doesn't know this one thing about man, that there is some hope for him. The entirety of propaganda, which you read, actually, in the newspapers, that's not news, by the way, that's propaganda, one way or the other. It says it's all bad over there. And the entirety of this adds up to the fact that there is a great emergency along, or man is a pretty bad fellow. Now, the truth of the matter is, they are not competent observers. Not competent observers on these newspapers, for the excellent reason that they are looking for news. And therefore, they print only what man considers to be news. But they've printed this for so long that they rather overlook this fact that there is some hope for it. Now, although I know nothing about the situation whatsoever, I understand of recent weeks there's been a considerable amount of discussion about the finances of Great Britain. There's some chap, undoubtedly a good fellow, who has been making some statements concerning the budget and concerning taxation and so on. And I've looked that over. And the general opinion on the matter is that it's all bad over there. Well, the fact of the case is that undoubtedly this thing is going to work out one way or the other. What the newspapers never print is down at the bottom of that story is this chap is a good fellow, and he and some other fellows who do know something or other about finance will sooner or later, probably, we hope, come up with some solution which is acceptable. If this one is not, why, they will find it out sooner or later and they will get another solution. Newspaper never says that, you know. It never mentions it. It just says, yow, 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 growl, 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 you know. Truth of the matter is that the subject of finance is not a very bad subject. It's not a very difficult subject. I know I'm an expert, as a matter of fact, in economics. Expert, absolutely. Have you ever heard of the Dormaphone? Some chap with more business acumen than knowledge of the mind dreamed up an item whereby you put a platter on a little gramophone and all night while you're asleep, why, you wear a set of earphones or have a speaker under the pillow and it keeps telling you things. And I have one that doesn't wear platters. It wears skirts, but but anyway, this is a fascinating device, and one is supposed to become an expert in any subject it talks about. You see, you're supposed to learn languages and all sorts of things. Well, during the latter part of the war, I got the notion that nobody knew what they were fighting about, so I took the opportunity of taking some training in military government. I'd gotten awfully tired of it, not of the war, but of the stuff that came out of cans they said was edible. They did. They said it was edible. One of the more interesting aspects of the war. And I went back to Princeton University and took a course in military government. And we had had thrown together there, out of the foremost educators in the U.S., and this is a fact, a hasty course, the very best chaps involved in any one subject, lecturing like mad on the subject, trying to make some fellows who would be able to put back together some of the more distorted economic and political systems that had been left in the wake of a rather, I think you will say, agree with me when I say, a rather enthusiastic sort of destruction. And one of the things that was destroyed in the wake of this was, of course, the economic and political system. Well, once you destroy an economic system and a political system, there is no third dynamic to amount to anything. No one knows quite how to get into agreement with anyone else, and so the economics have a tendency to lapse. Well, this course was a very fine course. Wonderful course. I was dog-tired the whole time. And three other chaps and myself that roomed together there at Princeton had all of us been brought out of combat areas, and we had nightmares most of the night every night, and we never got any sleep to amount to anything. When we weren't sleeping, why, we were going down to Philadelphia and buying what passed for whiskey during the war. I mean, it was a fine course. But anyway, I became an expert on economics. Absolutely, I'd never realized how expert a person could become on economics. Economics was the first class that we had in the morning. We used to go to a study hall, which was always overheated. It ran about 90 degrees. The janitor thought that would be a good way to support the war effort. And I would sit down there with my brother officers, and this chap, a very excellent lecturer, would start in lecturing. And, of course, I would go to sleep. And an hour later, would wake up and go on to my next class, which I think is was labor. And that was such an arduous class, I usually managed to stay awake through it, never learned anything about labor. But several months after I got out of Princeton, it was quite interesting to note that I considered myself quite an authority on economics. I'd be at a party or something like that, and someone would talk about economics, and I'd find myself holding forth. Very curious. I'd sort of stand back and look at myself. My goodness, where did you get to be an expert like this? You know, fantastic, quoting all these rules and all that sort of thing. And then I remembered I had slept through all the economic courses. It seemed that it was very easy just to be the professor. You know? I had him set up as a complete machine. I wanted an opinion on economics. I just dropped the sixpence in the slot, and out it came. Nothing to it. Wonderful, wonderful way to know a subject. Wonderful way to know a subject. I was quite expert. I was normally wrong in my opinions, but but they sounded very learned. Very learned opinions. And after a while, I thought, well, you know, with all of these tremendously interesting opinions on the subject of economics, maybe I really ought to know something about the subject. You know, maybe I do, maybe I don't. Where the dickens did all this come from? And then, of course, I had to start sorting it out. It was easy as long as one had swallowed a pill called an education on economics, you see, while he was asleep, to simply run off paragraphs of it. Very easy. All one had to do when he wanted an opinion was just run off a random paragraph, you see. Nothing to it. Didn't have to think about it. There it was. Everybody sounded very learned, so everybody accepted it. Wonderful. Only trouble was, I was getting worried about the subject. I was getting worried. I found that it was very difficult to turn the record on and off. And after a while, I did get a hold of a few textbooks on wartime economics and looked them over, and had to find out something about it in my own defense. I had to find out something about it. All I had up to that time was a machine that knew something about it, you see. And I couldn't let a machine like that run me, so I studied it over and after a while worked out a couple of minor principles of economics which were satisfactory to me. That is that people buy things and they sell things. I got that far. But it's very, very intriguing that we carry around a mechanism or a mind or a beingness which can do this sort of thing. Very interesting. It's sufficiently interesting that it's a great temptation to educate everyone that way. And it's also a great temptation to run a government by simply installing a machine somewhere in the middle of it that will sound off with large paragraphs every now and then, you know. And everybody says, well, that's learned enough. We will adopt that policy. It's interesting, but it isn't very workable. You can turn on educational machines all you want to. You can set up the most complicated artistic patterns. You know, an artist stands there and paints a big picture, and somebody comes along and says, how do you do it? And he says, oh, I just have a feel for it. I mean, he isn't paying any attention to it. He's got a little switch over here, you know, and he turns it on, paints a picture, and turns it off. That's perfectly all right. We all do that. We get an automobile, and we turn on its ignition, and hit a starter, put it in gear, let off its brake, let in the clutch, and so on. We not only have a machine called an automobile, but we have another little machine which drives the automobile. And that's all very well, as long as you know you're driving the automobile. As long as you know that you have a switch that starts the drive an automobile machine, which then turns on the automobile switch, you see? As long as you are cognizant of the fact that you are doing this, you never get into any trouble at all. But what would happen? What would happen if you one day were sitting in a car and you said, let's see. There's nothing happening. I can't drive the thing. Something's happened. Well, all that's happened is you forgot to turn on the switch. You put the switch on automatic, too. Get the idea? Now, every once in a while, we run into somebody in some mediumistic trance or something of the sort who is talking Arabic or Swahili or Sanskrit or something. They're chattering on madly, and they halfway through that, and they turn off onto German irregular verbs, and they go through that, and it becomes very, very significant because they are now speaking Spanish as it was spoken 1,000 years ago, and this is all very mysterious, and everybody says, gee. Well, I don't know what to say in gee for it. Somebody who has lost the switches. He has no switches to turn on this. They start talking it, they don't stop talking it. They actually can't tell when they're going to start talking, when they're not going to start talking. How would you like to be going around London not knowing whether you're going to talk French or English? Well, it's just a matter of the control of the automaticity. There's nothing wrong with the automaticity, but there's a great deal wrong with losing the fact that you are in control of the automaticity. And when that goes automatic, too, watch out. Something's going to happen there. Going to start doing all sorts of things. And that actually, in a mechanistic way, is about all there is to aberration. Human aberration. Well, we have here a stage. Brings to mind the fact that practically, I don't know. I think there have been two movies recently that did not concern themselves with insanity. I mean, the last couple of years, there have been two made which did not concern themselves with insanity. But a poll of the actresses and actors involved reads almost straight out of the HASI request for processing list. That's interesting, isn't it? Here we have an actress, and she's playing in something called Snake Pit or something of the sort. And She goes through this whole movie being insane, you see? And goes through the whole movie, and at the end of the movie, why, doesn't turn off the switch. Now, she set up her acting on automatic. She said, what kind of a person is this person who is supposed to be insane? And she sets this up, and then she goes through the proper postures and says the proper gibberishes with the proper expressions and acts a bit mad, you see. And then, because there is a little rule in acting which becomes very acute in movie making, that you go into character when you go on set and out of character when you go off set. But that doesn't mean in scene and off scene. That means when you come on in the morning, you go into character, and when you go off in the afternoon, you go out of character. That's the way they do it. And, of course, they film the last scene first, and then because it's on the same set, you see, then they film the first scene immediately after that. And then they film three or four other scenes that occur with that same set, one of which is the death of the hero, see? And then we move on to another set, which we've built at vast expense, and we find there... the actress finds herself just meeting the hero. She has just held him in her arms, you see, perishing. But she walks out of this next scene, and there she is. Well, it's a very fascinating thing. When I was down in Hollywood, it became very, very fascinating to me because every once in a while they'd say, change something in this script. This scene needs to be altered. I would have been watching them do this or that, and... this scene needs to be altered. Let's see, what are we shooting now, you know? And just have to junk the whole thing and go over and read the script all over again and get in its proper sequence and then change those words. Because somebody would be mentioning introducing the hero after he was dead in the picture unless you got it straight, you see? Well, it might not be so bad if an actress were to play then... the element of confusion is introduced. The actress perhaps plays... the role of an insane person on a stage. He comes to work and goes all the way through the play, and at the end of the play, why, is dead or something of the sort, or cured, and goes off, and tomorrow night plays it all the way through to the end, and dead or cured, and walks off. She's running a cycle of action, isn't she? No confusion involved with it. But in a movie, that's different. You see, it's a confusion. So this person has actually been... in a confusion of narration, playing an insane character for a long time. It takes some months, usually, to make a movie. They go mad. And yet, in essence, what do? They put this character on automatic, and then they forget that they turned on the switch. And they don't turn the switch off again. And they come around, and they see an auditor, if they're lucky, somebody else, if they're unlucky, and... they say, do something for me, please. All day long I hear these voices going on in my head. Person is still acting in the film, has never left the film. You see, has never left it. Person is still, you might say, stuck on the stage. Well, that's only the way it looks. The truth of the matter is, the person set up an entire machinery in his being. And this entirety of machinery consisted of turning on the roll and turning it off again. And then they got sloppier and sloppier and forgot to turn it off. And then they forgot that they themselves ever had turned it on or were responsible for turning it off. And you have this character then, actress, acting an insane role. The rest of her life, perhaps. Somebody in Scientology doesn't give her a hand or... somebody in some other healing profession. Fantastic, isn't it? This is an interesting thing, since all of us are supposed to have something called a character or a personality. And where this personality or character starts to get out of hand, where we feel that we are not behaving to the optimum in any given situation, we are simply feeling this one interesting fact. We feel that we are being miscast at the moment and the wrong machine is running. You know, let us say that very often at the office we go back and clean up the rear room in our old clothes or something like that, and we swear and cuss around while we move all the stuff around and the garbage out and wonder how everybody could have accumulated all this junk, you know. That isn't our ordinary role, but we've done that, and we've set that up, and we have to keep an eye on things. And then one day, why, we're in the front office where we're supposed to sell somebody or meet clients and so forth, and we start acting the same way that we act when we throw out garbage. Somebody would say we have gone slightly mad. And the funny part of it is the individual himself would agree with it. Say, yes, I shouldn't be acting in this wise. It's quite interesting that a lot of fellows go on talking about the tough points of the war, you know. They've got a machine that was set up to take care of and match the circumstances of war, and they turned it on. They played it in dead earnest, and then they never got a chance to turn it off. You know, they just didn't turn it off, that's all. They didn't put the machine off automatic control. Now, to some degree, an individual, when he sets up this machine, sets it up to control him, to some degree. We learn to speak a language. We have a language machine. This language machine we set up in such a way that it makes us talk the language, you see? And if you want a really plugged-in machine, it is this language machine. All of our life, more or less, is being filtered through one of these language machines. It's what somebody else said and what we said that occupies most of our activities, what somebody wrote in a letter or didn't write and what we wrote or didn't write. Things of this character, because the very central pin of existence is communication. Well, what happens to an individual who puts his entire life on automatic, who puts his entire role on automatic, who he himself feels no slightest necessity to go on and act himself, contrary to the machine which is telling him how to act? Now, when I say machine, I mean, of course, a pattern of thought, which may or may not have mass, which may or may not have been set up someplace in one's beingness. But it is simply a pattern of thought which one starts running and stops running. If it goes fully on automatic, one doesn't start it. He depends on the environment to start it. He depends on the fact that he sees a lorry in front of him to start it, his emergency response machine while driving a car. See, it takes over and gets him through the emergency or something, and then he more or less turns it off and pants a bit and so on. He avoided the lorry and so on. Well, one of these fine days, he won't turn the machine off, and he'll go right on avoiding the lorry. Well, there's nothing wrong with automaticity, but there is something wrong with losing sight of the fact that you are the author of the machine in the first place, that you turn it on at your choice, and that you can turn it off anytime you want to, because you set it up. Now, here's another oddity. Now and then, other people set up machines in us. Our table manners, probably a point. They were probably set up in us with what ardor. And after a while, we have a tendency to lose control over eatingness. We start dieting and we start doing various things trying to turn off our eatingness or put it under control. What's happened? Well, maybe we were taught to eat. And maybe that was somebody else's machine. And the somebody else turned it on and we're still waiting for them to come back and turn it off. Well, of course, they've been dead for a few years. Very interesting problems can occur there, can't they? Well, the entirety of life is an entirety of matching or mismatching roles. We play certain roles. Meet people who are playing certain other roles. The only difficulty in life occurs when we cannot play a role or not play a role at will. You see? We become then out of control of the machinery, of the beingness, of the body, and of life itself. And after that, we have a tendency to just drift along in the stream of life, and somebody raises a small flag, and that means that we do so-and-so, and somebody else says, you're a dog, and that means that we get angry, and we put up our fists, and somebody else says, oh, my dear, I have always liked that hat, and the lady in question says, what a catty remark. You know. We're supposed to do these various things, and so we get on a sort of a stimulus-response, machine-versus-machine arrangement. Now, this is all very well as long as everybody's machines are really working in response to the various environmental stimuli. If they see the same things in the environment, and they get the right machine working when they see the right things, why, we would still be able to make this work. We could theoretically have a society then in which everybody would be kind of a wound-up doll, you know? Everybody would be going through his roles just so, and you would go along, and when this happened, why, then that happened, and when something else happened, that something else happened. Everybody with his machines on, and nobody remembering that he had turned them on in the first place, and nobody remembering that he could turn them off. So we could have a society of sorts. Providing no machinery ever broke down, and providing always that everybody's machine turned on at the right time for the right circumstance. Perfect, you see. If as long as everybody's, all the right machines ran at the right moment, you go to a dinner party, everybody at the dinner party has his dinner party machine running, you see. You go to a prize fight, and everybody has his prize fight machine running. You read about the government, and you talk to the government, and the government has the government machine running, and you have your government machine running. It's all right, you see. I mean, it'll all work out just perfectly. Until somebody went to a dinner party and turned on his prize fight machine. Or until somebody talked to the government and turned on his war-fighting machine. You see, that's actually what happens in a revolution. They've had a war of some kind, and there are a lot of people around with war machines running, and they talk to the government, and their war machines turn on, and you get revolution. It's just as stimulus-response as you can get. Well, fortunately, this sort of situation doesn't have to occur. It doesn't have to happen. It isn't necessary for the entire society to run on machinery. It isn't necessary for everybody to go knocking around in the society, ramming up against this stimulus response and that stimulus response. It isn't necessary to have everybody on automatic, because the society would rapidly go to pieces if this were the case. If the society is taught continually that this is the case, it is liable to happen. It's quite interesting that machines talking to machines do not make much communication. Somebody's got to be there to start and stop the communication lines. When we start running everything on machines, and when everybody in the society is convinced that they're just wound-up dolls anyhow, then we get this great oddity occurring. We get communication breaking down inside the society. The wrong levers are being pressed on the wrong machines in the social order. So we get people more and more out of gear with the social order. Somebody has an insanity machine, and it gets turned on by the dinner party. And, you know, this sort of thing. Well, if nobody's in control of the machinery, it'd go mad. If you could just think what would happen to all the traffic on Bayswater if you took out all the drivers and let everything keep running. It would be an interesting pileup, wouldn't it? It's almost worth seeing. But it isn't necessary to make an experiment to know the consequences. The consequences are already visible. Where a society falls out of communication one with another, it is not capable then of appreciating life or controlling it or doing anything about it. Life becomes too much for them. Life becomes an overpowering burden. And they say they don't want to live anymore. They say the best thing to do is just to kick this whole thing off. Let's just step out of this machine versus machine activity. Let's step out of this automatic versus automatic machine activity. Let's succumb. Let's not live, let's die. And, of course, then the society really does go to pieces. It's quite interesting. If everybody runs on just his own responses, if he has everything on automatic, if he's no longer in control of any part of it, and if everyone else around him is under this circumstance, we can be certain that the group will go to pieces because there's no livingness in it, and the group will start dying. It's as simple as that. When we train a company of soldiers, we have a tendency to set them up with machinery never to be turned off, you see? We set them up so they march on order, and they shoot on order, and they do this on order, and that on order. And what do you know? One of those fellows comes out of the army, and he's still, to some degree, running on this machine, so that if you were to suddenly say to him, "Tension!" Why, although he were walking along in a bowler and with an umbrella, he would probably snap his heels together and then look silly. In other words, the machine is always available to be tapped. Now, if you were going to prevent this from occurring, if you were going to put some life back into the society, if you were to put the society back together again so that it did have some wish to survive, if you were going to make life a little bit better, really all you'd have to do would be to put man a little more in control of his actions and reactions. That's really all you would have to do. But, of course, that's much too simply stated. It isn't quite as easy as that. Take something like Scientology to take an individual and set him up so that he can turn his machines on and off at will. Quite interesting that an individual very often drops out of sight to such a degree that he doesn't know he's running on machinery. But once you fish him up and say, "Hey, why don't you turn that machine on or turn that machine off? Let's practice a little bit about this whole thing. Let's set up life a little bit better and unset it and so on. Let's actively and knowingly make decisions to do this and to do that." All of a sudden he says, "You know, I can control this thing. I have some control over this thing too." Well, now when a whole people decides to put their finance on automatic, and nobody ever has any expression or thought concerning the finances of that particular department of government, everyone then merely becomes the effect of that particular department. Do you see? We say, well, we have no further responsibility for finances. It's all being taken care of by an automaticity known as, we'll call it, the Department of Finance. And whatever it does, well, that's what it's going to do. Well, actually, those chaps will continue to do what they can, but at the same time, whatever they do makes an effect out of everybody in the nation. Why did it make an effect out of everybody? Because the nation set up all of its finances on automatic, and they don't have the start and stop switch available, unless they themselves are wisely using their ability to ballot and choice at the polls. They can do it to that degree. But for the immediate decisions to be made by that department, they don't make them. It's very remote. Therefore, everyone to some degree becomes an effect. Now, a man, to be a balanced individual, has to be partially a cause and partially an effect. He has to be able to be the effect of other things. Otherwise, he never has any experience. There's no fun in playing the game at all, unless he can be the effect sometimes. But to be the effect all the time is an unthinkably arduous thing. Have you ever lived with anybody who did all the talking that was done? Never listened to any of your talking at all? Well, they're making you a continuous effect, and you don't like that. But the funny part of it is you wouldn't like it either to have to do all the talking yourself. See? You would, in other words, just as soon be cause as effect, unless you get overbalanced on the thing. Now, let's take a department which is running, about which you have nothing to say. You have no decision to make with regard to this at all. When they say you will have 10 less pounds per week in your pocket, that's it. You got 10 pounds less per week in your pocket, and that was 2 pounds more than you were making that you're now getting less. They say it, and that's you. You're done. All right. You have no say in the matter. Well, you'd only have no say in the matter if you didn't speak. I have no idea whether you have been telling you to tell this Department of Finance down here to get on the ball. That's not the point. We're merely illustrating something about the mind. But you would only have no say if you didn't speak. You understand? It's one of these idiotic solutions, you see. All right, now we'll consider that within your own beingness, as a finite beingness, you are a person who is running more or less in his environment, but you yourself have certain concerns within yourself, you know. There are things which you yourself think about, which you yourself enjoy and you yourself do, you see. And if you set up some little part of your being of which you're going to be the total effect, let me assure you, after a while, you'll get tired of it. Now, you would be amazed, but do you know that some people walk along with these little machines going inside their heads, so to speak? Not really inside their heads, but it gives you a more graphic picture. Little machines. And they do something, and this little voice will pop up, or this little stream of thoughts will come out. Now, do you think that was really the right thing to do? Do you know that people do that? It's amazing to walk down the street, and if you could, as you walk down the street, look inside the heads of people and see what was really going on. It's fantastic. Utterly fantastic what's occurring. Do you really think that was the right thing to do? You say to some friend of yours, you know, I'm a fairly good golf player. I play fairly good golf. And this little machine says, bragging again. Now, another type of machinery is you say, good morning, the idea? It's a little machine that when you start to communicate goes snip. It just tells you you can't remember. That's all. It's all it's saying all the time. It doesn't matter whether it does it with sheets or mirrors or something. It's just telling you whenever you try to remember that you can't remember. And that's the totality of the machine. It's an idiotic thing. These so-called bad memories. Fellows just set up remembering or not remembering on automatic, you know. And he starts to remember, which sets the machine off to tell him he can't remember. He set it up originally because he said, well, there's some very bad things that I mustn't remember, and if these very bad things are remembered, something horrible would happen to me. So he starts to remember the name of Mr. Brown, and the machine says, snip. So he says, how are you, Mrs.? See, that's the way he behaves. He has simply set up memory on automatic, too. Sometimes individuals do this. And they have memory machines. And the fellow himself, sort of standing there, and it says, you will now remember that you get the number 7 bus, and you will now remember that you should take home a half a dozen rolls. You know, it tells you this and it tells you that, and one day it's not talking. What happened to it? You don't know, but you said it had all of your memory and it was remembering everything for you, and then something went wrong in it and you didn't have any control of it anymore, and it got busted and it wasn't working anymore, and you'd have no memory. See how this would be? But you set the thing up originally. Why not just set up another memory machine? That's easy. If you've got to have a machine on automatic. All right. It's a very simple thing. You look at this situation with the government. Do you realize that if everybody started talking, they are doing a pretty good job of it to each other right now on this budget affair, but if you started talking to that particular department and you said, hey, you got all the education, you know how smart you guys are, now let's get on the ball. Let's figure this out. Let's snap to here. Come on, it's not the way I want it. Now, you're supposed to figure out the solution. If you started talking to a particular unit of government of this character, believe me, the most unbelievable things would happen at once. I saw an example of this. They decided to brainwash the U.S. Army and the U.S. Navy and the U.S. Marine Corps and the U.S. Air Forces. The Russians were doing it, so they might as well do it in the United States. And they said that the reason they were doing all this was to condition these men, to condition them so that they would not be subject to collapse, you know, if they ever were brainwashed. So therefore, if you brainwashed them, they would have been brainwashed so that then if anybody else brainwashed them, they would have been brainwashed then too. Well, anyhow, they figured this out very smart, and they carried it on for a number of months, and they ran 29,000 men through one particular camp. They were busy brainwashing them left and right. As a matter of fact, they were cracking many of them up, and these men were going back to their units after having been brainwashed and just completely flubbed, unable to perform their duties at all. It was not any light thing that was being done. All right. They went along for a number of months. They spent millions and millions of dollars building camps in which to brainwash fellows. They had the fellows that were doing the brainwashing were ex-Korean prisoners of war and so forth, and they were dressed in space opera uniforms. And, it was real cute. I mean, somebody went mad. And one day, a Newsweek reporter came along and fell across this as a story. And the government had no other choice but to pass it, so he published it. So it was front page news one day, and very mildly stated, and then the next day they got it off onto the second page. And the next day they got it off on the third page. The next day they got it off onto about the sixth page. The next day they had it off on the back page, bottom column, and the next day they didn't carry it at all. They said, well, we've sure handled the public now. We're all set. And the next day it was on the front page. It took the American public that long to react. And letters were landing in an avalanche. With every senator, with every newspaper, with the Army and with the Navy and the Marine Corps and the officers in charge and with their boys in the service, every mother who had a boy in the service and who could write said, wow. And the government valiantly had buried it, but there it was back on the front page. And all the propagandists and agents and so forth, they all worked hard, and the next day they had it back over on page three, you know. Well, getting this to front page. Everybody was objecting to it being on page three. All of a sudden, young men started to stay away from the Selective Service Office. They wouldn't go near the place. Nobody had anything to do with the Army and the Dickens with them. You know, and right the center and so on. Well, I don't know what the final outcome of it was, but the American public didn't want that machine on automatic. And they did instinctively the right thing. They communicated to it. Instead of being, then, the effect totally, they became partially cause. By doing what? Communication. Now, above communication, there's one other factor, and that's decision. One's power of decision is greater than his power of communication. Decision, thinkingness, the ability to decide, to determine the course of something, is greater than the decision to communicate, which is a specialized decision, of course. But where we have cause and effect is concerned, the action taken is communication. So after a fellow makes up his mind to write, he writes. The fellow who merely writes before he made up his mind isn't being cause, he's being effect anyhow. See, he doesn't know that he's talking. But here we have the decision to do something. Now, theoretically, if you could decide well enough, if your power of decision was so good, if every time you went into a restaurant, I mean, all this is very elementary. Life is an elementary thing, you know. Life doesn't belong in a textbook. Life doesn't belong in a university department. Life belongs where it is. And where it is, it's breathing and living. And knowledge about it certainly doesn't belong to anybody except the guy that's doing some living. And I've never seen very many professors who live very hot. Anyhow, what with the salaries they get and everything, it's hard to do. Of course, there are a lot of good-looking coeducational students, now that I come to think about it. Maybe life isn't too hard in these universities, but anyhow, knowledge of life should be in the hands of those who are living. That's who should have knowledge of life, not professors or somebody. And if you were going to a restaurant and sit down, and somebody handed you a menu, and you said, well, let me see. You read the menu. Well, let's see. Ham? No, it's ham. Mixed grill? No, it's omelet? No. I wouldn't say your power decision on the subject of food was very hot at all. Of course, I'm sure you haven't, but I'm sure you have been in a restaurant with somebody who takes... Well, as we look over this menu, the ability to decide, we say, depends on the menu, depends on the prices, and depends on what we sort of feel is going on in the kitchen. And we're trying to sort all this out and make a decision. We feel if we came in and said, without a menu at all, we came into the place and we said, ham, coffee, chips, that's it. And somebody'd feel hurt. And if we were good enough on our power of decision, actually the data on which we would be making our decisions would also be adequate too. If we went into a restaurant and said, ham, coffee, chips, you know, and our power of decision and our power of knowing was great enough, actually they would have the ham. The ham would be the best thing to order at that moment. They would have the chips, and the coffee machine wouldn't be broken down either. So there's a higher level in this communication we mustn't lose sight of. But let's just take this business about automaticities that we're talking about. A person has to have a power of decision. He has to be able to determine the existence of something, just a little bit lower order of decision, in order to determine whether or not to turn the switch on or off. See, it requires a power of decision to say, well, now we're going to talk Spanish. Click. Gab, gab, walla, walla. Un gato escaldado agua frío, yay. And then say, well, now I'm through talking Spanish. Click. He has to be able to decide the course of existence of something. Namely, a machine. Namely, most importantly. Now, supposing he says, now I'm going to talk Spanish. And a memory machine, compounded over here with a Spanish-talking machine, and over here with a socially kind of broken-down machine, are liable to go into action all at once, or be in action. He's got to have enough decision to select out each one and turn it off or on, as the case may be. And it looks awfully complex to him. But he always has another argument. He always has another thing he can do. The best thing to do is simply to decide, or not decide, as the case may be. But there's always something else he can do. That's communicate. Now, we've almost got here knowingness at the top and then deciding on knowingness or getting knowingness by decision. See, maybe you decide there's simply something to know in order to know something, you know. Knowingness at the top, then knowingness by decision, and then just decision all by itself. It will be, it won't be. Well, that's determinism. And below that, there's still something you can do that's still in the same order of magnitude, and that's communicate. Now, what an automatic machine does, like the Department of Finance, Bureau of the Budget, is goes on and operates, and it sort of turns on without any choice. I'm sure there wasn't anybody present said, the budget director will now square around everything, see? All of a sudden, it turned on. That was an unexpected thing to happen. It was done without anybody's real decision. We kind of knew it was going to happen, but we didn't anticipate it. We were surprised. All of a sudden, the machine starts running. See? Here's this on the third dynamic, on the dynamic of groups. In the nation, we have this automaticity startup. We didn't have any control over it. Well, certainly, I'm sure that you're not going to sit there. Maybe somebody in the audience is hot enough or good enough to do this, but the chances are slightly against it at this time and place of your suddenly changing your mind about the Bureau of Budget and it disappears. The chances are a little bit against that. But there's still no reason to feel apathetic about it if you simply can't change your mind and bring it to pass. Because, remember, the down below decision is communication. And this thing is making you an effect, isn't it? Now, communication is an interchange of ideas between two terminals. That's all it is. And one of them is cause, and the other is effect. And then the second one becomes cause, and the one over here becomes an effect in its turn. So we have cause, effect, cause, effect. Cause, effect, cause, effect. That's all we mean by cause and effect. Effect of an idea which has come across a distance. And, of course, the idea can be awfully solid sometime, like a blockbuster, but it's still a particle. All right. Now, down below, then, knowingness is decision, and down below decision is communicatingness. And this machine turns on over here, and it says, everybody will now have 10 pounds less per week or something of the sort, and you're only making 8 pounds, so that leaves you indebted for 2 pounds. You didn't make that decision. You decide that's the wrong decision has been made somewhere. What do you know? You can still do something about it. You can still do something about it. You can say, yipe. You can say, say you. You can still communicate to that automaticity in the group called the third dynamic. You can still communicate to it. You see, now, it was going to make you an effect, wasn't it? And if you never said anything, you would just go on being the effect of it, wouldn't you? See, it spoke, and you received the message. And then you didn't do a thing. You went on. Do you know that just by that mechanical arrangement, you would have to obey it? That is the greatest oddity in the world. It's just the fact that you received it, and then you knew it, and you weren't going to do anything about it. You were never going to say anything back. Made you then the effect of it, and you would go on being the effect of it. Do you see this? In other words, you never speak up again. Well, it's an incomplete cycle of action. The machine has spoken, and you have received the communication, but you've never answered. One half of a communication formula has evolved. That's all that's taken place. The way to keep from being an effect of anything is to speak up at it. Isn't that idiotic? I know it's liable to practically knock your head off sometimes when you do, but let me assure you, it's better to have your head knocked off sometime than just to go on being the effect of something. See? There are worse things than getting your head knocked off, believe me. Really, there are. It's having two heads and getting both of them knocked off. All right. Where we have, then, a machine starting up and making this the effect of it, we have no power of decision over having started it. We didn't know where the switches were. We didn't know how to turn it on or off. We felt it really wasn't our machine anyhow. We didn't have any real responsibility for it. There's still something we can do. We can communicate back at it. And this is so fantastically effective that ordinarily the machine can't answer us. Because it's very seldom alive, and we are. It unmocks. That's usually what occurs. A machine starts up by which you find yourself speaking German. You're suddenly speaking German. And you didn't intend to speak German. Sounds awfully strange, but really what you are is the effect of some kind of an automaticity that's speaking German. See, and it's telling you to speak German. Well, now you have these things set up by your consent already. see how odd this would be, though, for something to start up and all of a sudden you'd have the impulse to say, yeah, yeah, and all kinds of things. Not English. Well, you'd say, well, how do we handle that? That makes me sort of mad. I'm sort of goofy. Instead of saying yes, I'm saying ya, ya, and ya, wo. I don't like that. I'm going to stop doing it, you say. Oh, no. You're making a power of decision where you yourself probably have no sphere of decision. You don't have a sphere of decision. You aren't at a position or at a level of knowingness where you can adequately make a decision. And you say, no, I'm going to stop that. First thing you do, you say, I'm going to make a decision. The buttons don't turn off. You keep on, no, the machine says, you really going to say, yah, 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 oh. See what would happen? You say, well, I'm going to stop that flow. I'm not going to pay any more attention to this machine. Yeah, yeah. Now, that's how to get one really plugged in. Why, what have you done? Machine says, speak German. It's spoken, hasn't it? So it's cause. And then you say, effect. And then you say, I'm going to stop being an effect. Oh, yeah? The thing originally was in this kind of a category. Originally, it was in this category. It could speak or not speak as you decided to make it speak. And then it's been neglected for so long, and you've been the effect of it for so long, and you've never talked back to it for so long, that when it speaks, you haven't any communication line by which to make your decision felt. Got it? No communication lines left. You waited too long. You were too long the effect of something. So the whole line is just an inflow line, see? And you say back on this inflow line or something like this, stop. No. Very funny thing is all you have to do, however, is talk back to the machine. It's liable to go splat. You're liable to have a funny headache turn on or something like this going to occur. But that's not the time to stop talking to it. It's very funny. You don't say stop and pay no further attention to it. You simply talk back at it. And you'll cease to be the effect of it. Now, that's the lowest order of thing that you can do to an automaticity. You find your driving is poor. Your driving machinery is not as good as it was once. Well, why not? You learned to drive several years ago, and they've changed some traffic regulations since. They've changed car models since. Your machinery then was always being readjusted somehow or another, but the original machine which you decided to have run has been overpowered by the fact that you now have different factors to drive. Your driving machinery can get so automatic that your reaction time can fall to nothing. You have very poor decision over driving. Very funny part of it is you can sort of get the idea where your driving machine is, and you can say, all right, now you're going to do better. You'd be surprised what had happened. You didn't get the idea somewhere in your head or out here on the left of you or the right. Just talk back to it. Not angrily, but just talk to it and say, all right, now straighten yourself out. So on you. Very strange. Something's liable to happen if you do that. But the funny part of it is, it's probably the car that you're out of communication with. And if you were to, it sounds awfully funny to hear men talking to inanimate objects, you know. It becomes very silly. Everybody knows you shouldn't do that. But it's just the people who want you nuts that won't let you do that. You go out and you touch various parts of the car, which is communicating, you see. You touch parts of the car. Don't have the car sort of touching you. You know, you get in and the steering wheel lays itself in your hands. The starter comes up underneath back. You know, it's very interesting. All right. If we were to do this, learning this car is concerned, we would have to be able to talk back. And that's all you have to know how to do. Even if you get your head knocked off, that's still something you can still do against all these crossed-up automaticities and so assert and reassert your own self-determinism. Thank you.